Listening test.
Part 1. You will hear an interview with a woman called Rachel who is talking about the shows she puts on for children. You now have 45 seconds to look at the question. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully. You will hear the recording twice.
Rachel, tell us how your shows for children started. You studied art at college, didn't you?
That's right. But I gave up my career as an artist when my twin daughters were born. Painting took up too much time when I was looking after them. I thought about teaching art classes part-time, but instead I started making dolls for my daughters. I love acting, so I often invented little plays for the dolls, doing the voices myself.
And when did you start doing shows for other people?
When our daughters were 5, my husband suggested using the dolls to entertain the children at their birthday party. I wrote a little show and he built a dolls theatre. My daughters and their friends loved it. As a result, other parents asked me to come and do the show at their children's parties. That's how it all began.
Must be a lot of work for you.
Yes, I love making the dolls, but I decided that I needed someone to help me with the shows. Luckily, my neighbour Lena was keen to perform with me. Her husband records the music to go with the shows. It would be impossible to do everything on my own.
Have you ever had any problems?
Only once. I did a show for a group of 3-year-olds and I'd written a story about a lion. Unfortunately, the children were really afraid of the lion and started crying. I was worried the parents might complain, but luckily they were all able to laugh about it afterwards.
And what did you learn from that?
The experience taught me that I had to find out beforehand just what children enjoy. Like me, Lena has 2 daughters, so whenever we've invented a new story, we show it to our 4 girls first. They always tell us exactly what they think of it. And sometimes I take new dolls to the local primary school to check that children like them.
And the shows continue to be successful?
They do. I have a range of different shows for 5 to 9-year-olds. In fact, the shows have become so successful I could do one every day, but I don't want to do that. The reason the shows have become popular, I think, is because I love every minute of every show, and so other people love them too. I certainly didn't realise when I organised that birthday party for my daughters all those years ago that it would change my life so much.
Now listen again.
Rachel, tell us how your shows for children started. You studied art at college, didn't you?
That's right. But I gave up my career as an artist when my twin daughters were born. Painting took up too much time when I was looking after them. I thought about teaching art classes part-time, but instead I started making dolls for my daughters. I love acting, so I often invented little plays for the dolls, doing the voices myself.
And when did you start doing shows for other people?
When our daughters were 5, my husband suggested using the dolls to entertain the children at their birthday party. I wrote a little show and he built a dolls theatre. My daughters and their friends loved it. As a result, other parents asked me to come and do the show at their children's parties. That's how it all began.
Must be a lot of work for you.
Yes, I love making the dolls, but I decided that I needed someone to help me with the shows. Luckily, my neighbour Lena was keen to perform with me. Her husband records the music to go with the shows. It would be impossible to do everything on my own.
Have you ever had any problems?
Only once. I did a show for a group of 3-year-olds and I'd written a story about a lion. Unfortunately, the children were really afraid of the lion and started crying. I was worried the parents might complain, but luckily they were all able to laugh about it afterwards.
And what did you learn from that?
The experience taught me that I had to find out beforehand just what children enjoy. Like me, Lena has 2 daughters, so whenever we've invented a new story, we show it to our 4 girls first. They always tell us exactly what they think of it. And sometimes I take new dolls to the local primary school to check that children like them.
And the shows continue to be successful?
They do. I have a range of different shows for 5 to 9-year-olds. In fact, the shows have become so successful I could do one every day, but I don't want to do that. The reason the shows have become popular, I think, is because I love every minute of every show, and so other people love them too. I certainly didn't realise when I organised that birthday party for my daughters all those years ago that it would change my life so much.
That is the end of part one. Now turn to part two.
You now have 45 seconds to look at the questions for part two.
Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully. You will hear the recording twice.
You will hear an interview with a man called Stan Leach, who is talking about adventure sports.
Welcome back to the programme. Well, statistics show that the fastest growing sports in Britain are adventure sports. And I have with me Stan Leach, an official at the Sports Council, who's going to tell us a bit about some of them. Stan, where shall we start?
Well, most people start with walking, I think. Although, of course, strictly speaking, it's not necessarily an adventure sport. But it's what gets most people outdoors. Indeed, the great thing about walking in Britain is the endless variety. From an easy stroll to a country pub, to an energetic walk up a high peak. If you want to take up walking, you can start with a few short circular walks, and then pick something longer and more demanding.
What's this thing called scrambling I've been hearing about?
Yeah. Scrambling is sort of in the grey area between walking and climbing. Scrambles are graded according to difficulty, and on the harder ones, which are quite close to rock climbing, it's best to go with an expert.
Well, that brings us nicely on to climbing. That's really caught on here lately, hasn't it?
Yes. And of course, you know it doesn't have to mean going up the really big ones like Everest. Climbing might seem rather terrifying to begin with, but it's great fun and really keeps you fit. You start by climbing small crags before moving on to a rock face. I went for a day's lesson with mountaineer Alan Kimber in Scotland, and it was really scary but really exciting.
Right. Well, what's next?
Mountain biking. If you can get used to the saddle, you can cycle across Britain. But unlike in the USA, where there are special cycling paths, in Britain, most of the paths are the same as for walkers, which can cause a bit of trouble. After the initial investment, there's one bike that costs £4,000, but you can get a very good one for £200. It's a cost-efficient sport, and there are relatively easy trips, such as the Pyrenees Traverse, which has 70% downhill slopes with no major climbs.
Now listen again.
Welcome back to the programme. Well, statistics show that the fastest growing sports in Britain are adventure sports. And I have with me Stan Leach, an official at the Sports Council, who's going to tell us a bit about some of them. Stan, where shall we start?
Well, most people start with walking, I think. Although, of course, strictly speaking, it's not necessarily an adventure sport, but it's what gets most people outdoors. Indeed, the great thing about walking in Britain is the endless variety. From an easy stroll to a country pub to an energetic walk up a high peak. If you want to take up walking, you can start with a few short circular walks and then pick something longer and more demanding.
What's this thing called scrambling I've been hearing about?
Yeah, scrambling is sort of in the grey area between walking and climbing. Scrambles are graded according to difficulty, and on the harder ones, which are quite close to rock climbing, it's best to go with an expert.
Well, that brings us nicely on to climbing. That's really caught on here lately, hasn't it?
Yes, and of course, you know it doesn't have to mean going up the really big ones like Everest. Climbing might seem rather terrifying to begin with, but it's great fun and really keeps you fit. You start by climbing small crags before moving on to a rock face. I went for a day's lesson with mountaineer Alan Kimber in Scotland, and it was really scary, but really exciting.
Right. Well, what's next?
Mountain biking. If you can get used to the saddle, you can cycle across Britain. But unlike in the USA, where there are special cycling paths, in Britain, most of the paths are the same as for walkers, which can cause a bit of trouble. After the initial investment, there's one bike that costs £4,000, but you can get a very good one for £200. It's a cost-efficient sport, and there are relatively easy trips, such as the Pyrenees Traverse, which has 70% downhill slopes with no major climbs.
Now turn to part three. You now have 20 seconds to look at part three. Now we are ready to start. Listen carefully. You will hear the recording twice.
You will hear part of a lecture for business students about business values.
In public discussion of business, we take certain values for granted. Today, I'm going to talk about four of them: collaboration, hard work, creativity, and excellence. Most people would say they're all good things. I'm going to suggest that's an oversimple view. The trouble with these values is that they're theoretical concepts removed from the reality of day-to-day business. Pursue values by all means, but be prepared for what may happen as a result. They can actually cause damage, which is not at all the intention. Business leaders generally try to do the right thing, but all too often the right thing backfires if those leaders adopt values without understanding and managing the side effects that arise. The values can easily get in the way of what's actually intended. Okay, so the first value I'm going to discuss is collaboration. Let me give you an example. On a management training course I once attended, we were put into groups and had to construct a bridge across a stream using building blocks that we were given. The rule was that everyone in the team had to move at least one building block during the construction. This was intended to encourage teamwork. But it was really a job best done by one person. The other teams tried to collaborate on building the structure and descended into confusion, with everyone getting in each other's way. Our team leader solved the challenge brilliantly. She simply asked everyone in the team to move a piece a few centimetres to comply with the rule, and then let the person in the team with an aptitude for puzzles like this build it alone. We finished before any other team. My point is that the task wasn't really suited to team working. So why make it one? Teamwork can also lead to inconsistency, a common cause of poor sales. In the case of a smartphone that a certain company launched, One director wanted to target the business market, and another demanded it was aimed at consumers. The company wanted both directors to be involved, so gave the product a consumer-friendly name, but marketed it to companies. The result was that it met the needs of neither group. It would have been better to let one director or the other have his way, not both. Now, industriousness, or hard work. It's easy to mock people who say they work hard. After all, a hamster running around in a wheel is working hard and getting nowhere. Of course, hard work is valuable, but only when properly targeted. Otherwise, it wastes the resources that companies value most, time and energy, and that's bad for the organisation. There's a management model that groups people according to four criteria: clever, hardworking, stupid, and lazy. Here, lazy means having a rational determination not to carry out unnecessary tasks. It doesn't mean trying to avoid work altogether. Most people display two of these characteristics, and the most valuable people are those who are both clever and lazy. They possess intellectual clarity and they don't rush into making decisions. They come up with solutions to save the time and energy spent by the stupid and hard-working group. Instead of throwing more man-hours at a problem, the clever and lazy group looks for a more effective solution. Next, we come to creativity. This often works well. Creating an attention-grabbing TV commercial, for example, might lead to increased sales. But it isn't always a good thing. Some advertising campaigns are remembered for their creativity without having any effect on sales. This happened a few years ago with the launch of a chocolate bar. Subsequent research showed that plenty of consumers remembered the adverts, but had no idea what was being advertised. The trouble is that the creator derives pleasure from coming up with the idea and wrongly assumes the audience for the campaign will share that feeling. A company that brings out thousands of new products may seem more creative than a company that only has a few, but it may be too creative and make smaller profits. Creativity needs to be targeted to solve a problem that the company has identified. Just coming up with more and more novel products isn't necessarily a good thing. And finally, excellence. We all know companies that claim they strive for excellence, but it takes a long time to achieve excellence. In business, being first with a product is more profitable than having the best product. A major study of company performance compared pioneers, that is, companies bringing out the first version of a particular product, with followers, the companies that copied and improved on that product. The study found that the pioneers commanded an average market share of 29%, while the followers achieved less than half that, only 13%, even though their product might have been better. Insisting on excellence in everything we do is time-consuming, wastes energy, and leads to losing out on opportunities. Sometimes second-rate work is more worthwhile than excellence. Make sure it's excellent sounds like a good approach to business, but the just-get-started approach is likely to be more successful.
Now listen again.
In public discussion of business, we take certain values for granted. Today, I'm going to talk about four of them: collaboration, hard work, creativity, and excellence. Most people would say they're all good things. I'm going to suggest that's an oversimple view. The trouble with these values is that they're theoretical concepts removed from the reality of day-to-day business. Pursue values by all means, but be prepared for what may happen as a result, they can actually cause damage, which is not at all the intention. Business leaders generally try to do the right thing, but all too often the right thing backfires if those leaders adopt values without understanding and managing the side effects that arise. The values can easily get in the way of what's actually intended. Okay, so the first value I'm going to discuss is collaboration. Let me give you an example. On a management training course I once attended, we were put into groups and had to construct a bridge across a stream using building blocks that we were given. The rule was that everyone in the team had to move at least one building block during the construction. This was intended to encourage teamwork. But it was really a job best done by one person. The other teams tried to collaborate on building the structure and descended into confusion, with everyone getting in each other's way. Our team leader solved the challenge brilliantly. She simply asked everyone in the team to move a piece a few centimetres to comply with the rule, and then let the person in the team with an aptitude for puzzles like this build it alone. We finished before any other team. My point is that the task wasn't really suited to team working, so why make it one? Teamwork can also lead to inconsistency, a common cause of poor sales. In the case of a smartphone that a certain company launched, one director wanted to target the business market, and another demanded it was aimed at consumers. The company wanted both directors to be involved, so gave the product a consumer-friendly name, but marketed it to companies. The result was that it met the needs of neither group. It would have been better to let one director or the other have his way, not both. Now, industriousness, or hard work. It's easy to mock people who say they work hard. After all, a hamster running around in a wheel is working hard and getting nowhere. Of course, hard work is valuable, but only when properly targeted. Otherwise, it wastes the resources that companies value most, time and energy, and that's bad for the organisation. There's a management model that groups people according to four criteria: clever, hardworking, stupid, and lazy. Here, lazy means having a rational determination not to carry out unnecessary tasks. It doesn't mean trying to avoid work altogether. Most people display two of these characteristics, and the most valuable people are those who are both clever and lazy. They possess intellectual clarity and they don't rush into making decisions. They come up with solutions to save the time and energy spent by the stupid and hard-working group. Instead of throwing more man-hours at a problem, the clever and lazy group looks for a more effective solution. Next, we come to creativity. This often works well. Creating an attention-grabbing TV commercial, for example, might lead to increased sales. But it isn't always a good thing. Some advertising campaigns are remembered for their creativity without having any effect on sales. This happened a few years ago with the launch of a chocolate bar. Subsequent research showed that plenty of consumers remembered the adverts, but had no idea what was being advertised. The trouble is that the creator derives pleasure from coming up with the idea and wrongly assumes the audience for the campaign will share that feeling. A company that brings out thousands of new products may seem more creative than a company that only has a few, but it may be too creative and make smaller profits. Creativity needs to be targeted to solve a problem that the company has identified. Just coming up with more and more novel products isn't necessarily a good thing. And finally, excellence. We all know companies that claim they strive for excellence, but it takes a long time to achieve excellence. In business, being first with a product is more profitable than having the best product. A major study of company performance compared pioneers, that is, companies bringing out the first version of a particular product, with followers, the companies that copied and improved on that product. The study found that the pioneers commanded an average market share of 29%, while the followers achieved less than half that, only 13%, even though their product might have been better. Insisting on excellence in everything we do is time-consuming, wastes energy, and leads to losing out on opportunities. Sometimes second-rate work is more worthwhile than excellence. Make sure it's excellent sounds like a good approach to business, but the just-get-started approach is likely to be more successful.
That is the end of part three.
Time's up. Thank you.